Okay, well, joining me for the latest Forever Bristol City podcast pre-season review is Gregor McGregor. Obviously, everybody knows Gregor from Bristol Live, the man on the spot with Bristol City. Good evening, Gregor. Busy time for you, I would imagine, this week in the run-up, and it has been for a few weeks in the run-up to the season, yeah?
It is, yeah. Probably the busiest time of the season, to be honest. Plenty of previews like this one to do, so yeah. Yeah, a lot to do at the moment.
Yeah, last season, I guess, best forgotten on every level, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, it couldn't have been too much worse in that second half of the season. I think it was 7 defeats in the last 9 games. I think just the 3 wins over the last 21 matches. So, yeah, pretty disastrous all round. I know John Lansdowne said last week himself that basically, it was the threat of relegation that meant that they got rid of Dean Holden and Nigel Pearson came in. I think we all expected an uplift and it didn't work out that way.
I think it was telling that comment by, was it Bartolowski, the Millwall goalkeeper, when you get a pro criticising fellow pros that they were on the beach in what was a meaningless fixture for both clubs, really. That was quite telling, I thought, but there we go. So the clear out has happened, although saying that, we seem to have a surfeit of players in some areas of the pitch and not in others. We come on to that. But I would say, in the eyes of many City fans, the most inspirational signing of the summer was Dave Rennie, not the balding former Bristol City and Leicester midfielder, but the conditioning coach. I mean, you're up there at the HPC every day. Have you noticed a different feel about the place in that aspect of the club?
Yes, I have. I'll just correct you though, Dave. We're not up there every day. We've been up there the last few weeks covering matches, and we'll be up there for the under-23s games. But yeah, we don't get to go up there every day.
Okay.
We'll be up there tomorrow because it's the first pre-season press conference of the season. So Nigel Pearson is speaking ahead of the Blackpool game, so we'll be there then. But yeah, I mean that's part and parcel of the media today, though, that you're kind of kept away from the training ground. So there was pesky journalists too. Don't particularly know what's going on. So, yeah, I mean,
I was going to say, can't make it that easy if you only go when you're invited almost then, really. Is that right? Yeah? That's the long and the short of it.
As I said, absolutely. That's the way they control things these days. And you're obviously kept at arm's length. They don't want you to mingle with the players. They don't want you to build relationships with coaches, players or anything. You have to go through the press officer. The press officer dictates everything. But that's not unusual. That's every single club does it that way. It's basically the way the football clubs keep us out, really. So.
But back to Dave Rennie, what you've seen of him, yeah, he's making a difference, one would hope.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we reported, I think, more than anybody last season about the injury situation at Bristol City. I still don't think it's kind of acknowledged just how bad it was last year. I mean, people were reporting about and talking about the 20 bad injuries that Liverpool had across the season. Well, I think by our estimation, Bristol City were looking at something like closer to 30 injuries across the season. And in our estimation, and we did look around, it's a little bit difficult to judge exactly, but we did look around. We think that possibly Bristol City's injury problems were the worst in the whole of the EFL last season. And there are several different reasons for that. I'm not pointing at any particular person. It was an unusual season. We know there was back-to-back seasons effectively, and obviously with a lot of fixture congestion. And obviously Bristol City used a lot of young players as well, which is why we found Nigel Pearson talking about players needing to be more robust and fitter. And yeah, hence they brought in Dave Rennie. He was there for that last game, wasn't he? And yeah, I've spoken to Dave very briefly. And things look a lot better. They're almost trending at the moment, I think, with just possibly the one long-term injury, which is just Antoine Semenyo, although he's not too far away. We're expecting him back later this month and he could be back in action.
I think he's already back on grass. We've seen him on some of the videos. So Dave Rennie came in, the exodus happened. But saying that, the exodus happened, Simpson and then Baker and Vyman, those re-signing, I know Simpson was a free agent anyway, but those re-signing, did that surprise you, all of them, or Not really. They were all quite predictable. Was Baker the surprise package that they got him back?
Just Baker, if I'm honest, because on Vyman, we reported quite early that they were trying to renegotiate that contract that they had with him. I think that's part and parcel of, obviously, the pandemic affecting football and the club having to cut their cloth accordingly. And, yeah, obviously, in the case of Danny Simpson, I always thought if they were bringing him in for that few amount of games at the end of the season, last 10 games or whatever it was, 8 games even, then it was highly unlikely that they were going to just jettison him at the end of the season. It appeared they were going to have a very good look at him. So once we knew he was hanging around, then yeah, obviously it was just a case of getting that one over. It's just the Nathan Baker one, really, because obviously he was announced as going, first of all, and yeah, it did seem like that they wanted to bring in their own centre-backs. And yeah, we knew that they were looking at a few different guys, but they've obviously gone back to the board with Baker. And he does look a natural fit for a Nigel Pearson player for me. He's physically, if he stays fit, that is, he's physically a handful, isn't he? And got leadership ability. So
no, he looked a big and solid unit against Villa at Ashton Gate on Saturday, and fit. You know, I mean, he looked up for it. We just got to hope that he stays that way. Really, in terms of players going out between now and the end of August, I mean, Nigel Pearson said, it's quite refreshing actually, I'm not going to bring anybody in that isn't any better than what we've got. And I'm sure you wouldn't disagree with me that over the last 4 years under the Ashton Johnson regime, there were a hell of a lot of players that came in that just didn't go into the side, and it was like the club's in the bag. Yeah, so I think Nigel Pearson's happy with what he's got. I mean, it's being mooted about, I think, is a lad from Rotherham, a centre forward, for about £1 million or maybe £1.5 million. But I speak to a lot of City fans, as I'm sure you do, and Louis Britton, for nothing and with potential and a low wage, could solve that big man up front problem. I mean, he's not signed his contract yet, which people say is down to his dad rather than him, but you know, do you think Britain could sort the big man up front that seems to be the likely target?
Well, it's a heck of a jump, unfortunately, for him. In terms of, he went out, didn't he, on loan to, I think it was Torquay last season? And yeah, he didn't particularly do too well there. Then I think it was at Stockport as well, didn't pull up any trees either. But this is the problem, he keeps banging them in for the under-23s. I was there at Yate Town last night to see him score his latest goal, a header from across. And yeah, I mean, he came on, he scored, didn't he, on his championship debut as well. So he's got this handy knack of scoring around PS3, and that's not going to do him any harm, right? Definitely, I think get him in there and give him a chance. I mean, I see a lot of fans say about him that he hasn't got a pace, and he's got limitations to his game, and that's fairly easy to recognise. Yeah, but I'm one of these people that sort of sees people for the positives and what they offer you. And without a doubt, he's got a tremendous record. He's prolific for the under-23s last season. He does hold the ball up. He's aggressive. He's another one of these guys, like Baker, who I think Nigel Pearson would take a shine to, because he feels like he's the right character to fit with Pearson in terms of, yeah, being thundering into the challenges and being aggressive. I remember he had that sort of little spark up with Pontus Janssen, I think, in that final game of the season.
That's right, Pontus Janssen, yeah.
I like to see that.
Yeah.
Give him a try, but I'd be,
If not this week, do you think there will be outgoings before the end of August? Because we're always in this situation where you have a few games and then there's a flurry of transfer activity. And should we read anything into Kalas not getting any minutes? I mean, Nigel seems to be set on a Baker, Atkinson, double left foot centre pairing. But should we read anything into Kalas? And I heard from two separate sources, and this is where it gets silly, about Kalas is going to Brighton because they've got £50 million for Ben White. It does seem strange, and particularly in view of what happened at the end of the season, allegedly at the training ground. And Kalas had a good Euro 2020, didn't he?
Absolutely. I definitely think that's one to keep an eye on over the next couple of weeks. I think that's right up there. Obviously, he was club captain. That looks like it's been taken away from him. Dan Bentley's had the armband the last two games of pre-season. Nigel Pearson's got previous for having goalkeepers as his captain. I think he anointed Kasper Schmeichel as captain when he was at Leicester City. So we're fully expecting him to name Dan Bentley this weekend as captain once again, which obviously is a demotion for Callis. You said about it there, Dave, about the end of the season. That was very mysterious. I mean, he wasn't in the squad for that final game. There was obviously something that happened behind the scenes. Our understanding is that, yeah, something happened on the training ground. I don't think it was too big a deal from when we did some delving into it at the end of the season. And we were told by various sources that it's just one of those things that happens regularly behind the scenes at football clubs and basically don't make too much of a meal of it. However, it does appear that he's not back in favour now. And as you say, he's had a great Euro 2020. Maybe the club, and given that Nigel Pearson was the one saying the other day that to make further signings, he's got to make a sale, or there'll have to be a sale, they maybe want to bring the money in, as you say, from selling him. So absolutely, yeah, it would make every sense. The other thing is, it seems to be a lot of Premier League transfers about to take place. We're seeing, I mean, it's being heavily reported that Grealish is going to buy a £100 million deal tomorrow. Harry Kane could be on the move. Danny Ings has moved today from Southampton. There's going to be this whole trickle down of money, I think, from the top league all the way down through the leagues.
Yeah. So,
yeah, absolutely. There's going to be a lot of dollars.
And as you say, by the end, the transfer window is open to the end of August. I mean, somebody could even come in with a cheeky bid for Dan Bentley, couldn't he? Yeah, although if you look at what he did against Portsmouth and what he did the weekend, I had a friend say to me today, well, he's got those two out of the way early season. But, you know, if you look at saleable assets or players that might be attracted to other clubs, and at a lower level, clearly Taylor Moore, who I personally think he's a lovely guy, but I think his days are numbered here. But Kalas Nagy, even Masengo and Dan Bentley, they're the ones that somebody might just try it. And obviously, if we do get decent money for them, and what's decent these days, you know, would it all be ploughed back in or would it be used to mitigate the losses? Just for clarification, has Masengo been injured? Because he's not featured. Again, he's another one who's not featured at all so far. Other than half an hour against Celtic.
Yeah, I think he did have a problem because he was basically pictured by the club in the photography of doing sort of straight line running tests, I think, in a couple of weeks ago. I asked Nigel Pearson after, I think it was the Portsmouth game, and he said that he was fine. He obviously didn't want to give away too much on that. However, he did explain after the game at the weekend against Villa to me that basically he's due to come back into full training and he should be available for selection this coming weekend. Or if not this weekend, then certainly for the Forest Green Rovers game after that.
On the Tuesday. And I think whatever happens will be a much changed team against Forest Green, regardless of result or what have you. All right, let's look at the lineup. You've given the predicted lineup for this coming Saturday against Blackpool. It goes without saying that Dan Bentley is going to be in goal. Yeah. We talk about formations and you go four, is it 4-4-2? Is it 4-2-3-1? You know, is it 3-5-2? But it seems as though if we look at how it lined up against Villa and not necessarily the personnel, I think you were saying it's going to be Zach Viner's probably going to get the nod over Danny Simpson. I think that was what you were saying there. We look at the central defensive partnership. It looks like it's going to be Baker and Atkinson. Unusual to have two left footers in your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And actually, at the top end of the game, they're crying out for left footed centre backs. Almost every club is looking for them. So, yeah, that probably made, well, they've got a lovely blend of other characteristics apart from their left footedness, though, in terms of Atkinson's that little bit probably better on the ball.
Atkinson's yeah. Is a Webster-esque type player, isn't he? Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Baker is obviously, yeah, just so 110 miles per hour into those challenges and really tough to beat in the air. So, yeah, yeah. I think maybe he's looking at what they offer altogether. But yeah, you're right. In terms of passing lanes out, I would be surprised if they don't look at that in the future.
Yeah. Left back is Jay De Silva, and he's one of the few players that one would argue that he hasn't got a great deal of competition for that berth. Now, interestingly, in the piece I did with Chris Honor, he said that Jay De Silva, whose career here has been blighted by injuries, he's one of those players that really needs to step up to the plate this season. Yeah, and he used the term, he said he's in a bit of a comfort zone, because personally, I think he lacks the physicality and there's a lot of balls dropped over his head, but we don't see the forward play that was meant to be an attribute of his game. I mean, do you think Jay De Silva, he's there unless he really screws up, or do you think Cameron Pring is a real challenge to him in that position?
Yeah, I've got to admit, I think Jay De Silva is maybe not going to be one of these guys who necessarily fits into Nigel Pearson's plans over the longer term. I'm not too sure he's what he would look for from his fullbacks. And yeah, and we certainly haven't seen the best of Jay, or certainly not for a while. He was out for obviously so long injured last season. To be fair to Jay, I know Nigel Pearson was talking about over the summer saying he's had a fantastic pre-season and he is really coming back to full fitness. He's had that long-standing tibular problem and hopefully, yeah, those stress fractures have all been dealt with now. Maybe they're going to look to balance it up and have maybe one more sort of defensive fullback on the other side in terms of Biner or Simpson, and then you've got Jay De Silva or Campering bursting forward on the left. That's a nice balance. Yeah. However, is he good enough defensively? Is he solid enough? I'm not too sure. So that's another one I'd keep an eye on over there.
That's interesting. Now, if you look at the middle, I've done a middle, then I've done a creative, and then I've done the front. I mean, in the middle, you know, if you look at holding type midfielders, some going more forward than others, you've got realistically any two from King, James, Nash, Backinson, Williams when he's fit, and Masengo. Now, at the moment, it looks very much, and this is what you predicted, James and King as that holding two as a pivot. Personally, based on the second half, I thought Nash came in and did a good job, yeah? And I personally go for James and Nash, you know, because King's 32. He's not quite as old as Chris Brunt was. But do you think that King-James combo, the Red Leicester, is there in tablets of stone? I mean, you know, we've got three substitutes we can use, so we can change it. But do you think that's what will start on Saturday?
I think you'll start with King on Saturday just because he's done that the last couple of games. He obviously knows and trusts both James and King. And I think trust is a key thing for Pearson. I went down and watched the Exeter game I watched the Exeter game and Nagy was actually out on the right of midfield rather than in the centre. So he couldn't even make it into the middle two on that day. So maybe there's a little hint there on the pecking order. Yeah, I just think on Nagy again, he's another one who's had a good Euros, maybe isn't a natural fit for one of those holding midfielders. I could imagine that maybe Nigel Pearson might prefer other players in that position. If he doesn't, then why is he brought in these two central midfielders?
Well, that's right. And if Williams is fit, then, you know, you've really got, I mean, Matty James, if he can stay fit, he's almost, I think he'd be a good captain if it wasn't benched in the middle of the field there. But then you've got, you know, if Williams is fit, you've got a William James is the likely combo. And then that's still leaving out Masengo, Nash and Backinson, because I don't really think you can fit them in anywhere else. Now, if we go into the number 10 or the wide or what have you, I mean, you've got the enigma that's Casey Palmer. I haven't been as excited about a player, and this isn't Palmer, obviously, as I have been on the minutes, and it's only the Brentford game and what I've seen on TV and second half against Villa. Alex Scott, for me, you know, what's the saying? If you're good enough, you're old enough. He's got a Grealish-esque confidence and stature about him. I think he's got to be on. I think he's got to be in there. If it's left of a three, you know, so if you have King, James and Scott, yeah, playing in that type of combination, yeah? Do you think he would blood him in the opening fixture?
I'd be very, very surprised if he did chuck him in there. But then again, I do know that he's so, so highly rated at the club. And yeah, I mean, we've all seen what he added at the weekend when he came on in that second half against Villa. And he showed some sparks, showed some glimpses of that last season as well, didn't he? So,
yeah,
I don't see him starting this coming weekend, but I do hear you. I do think he's a top prospect. And yeah, what I like about him is the way he retains the ball. And,
yeah.
And he crosses just off. He's just probably a little bit more penetrating than maybe the likes of Callum O'Dowd. O'Dowd is good at running with the ball, but maybe his final ball isn't always as good as it can be, although I have to say it was very good against Plymouth. But I just would like to see possibly Scott and Palmer try together, because I think both of those guys are quite creative. A lot of vertical passes.
Yeah, because that could then be a 4-2-2, that's eight, leaves you three to fill the front. And we're moving on to the front now, because at the moment it's Vyman, Martin, O'Dowda, I'm going to call him an attacker, and Wells. I mean, we haven't really... I mean, O'Dowda for a winger does not have the final ball that Nicolas Eliasson seemed to be able to produce all the time. So, and with Jada Silva not getting down, we haven't really got anybody that can cross the ball in the literal sense of the winger. So if you did play Palmer and Scott, which is... I wouldn't argue with that. But so let's go. So it's going 4-2-2. And that's also, that's it. That leaves two up front then, doesn't it? Yeah. So who's your two up front? I guess it's Vyman and Martin, or do you do Wells and Vyman? What do you do?
It's got to be Wells for me. This is the thing. I mean, on the radio the other day, speaking to Jeff Twentyman, obviously Nigel Pearson has said that they can't afford a 20-goal striker at the moment. Well, they've got a 20-goal striker for me. Well, 20-goal a season striker for me, because Naki Wells has shown that he can reach those kind of figures. I'm not too sure he's ever actually hit 20 goals in a championship season. I think he hit 18 in the other season across both City and QPR, but 20 goals, including other competitions as well. So he's the kind of guy, though, that he's going to cause any team problems. He was prolific across the summer. I know that was against lesser international sides for Bermuda. I just think they've got to try him at some point through the middle, give him a sustained run. And,
yeah,
and that probably would unlock the goals for this side, especially if it was alongside Chris Martin, because there's a natural combination there, isn't it? The classic big guy, little guy.
Yeah. But if you go down that route, then if you go down that route of Martin and Wells, then you haven't got, you're losing the pace of Vyman. And he looks sharp enough, but what is he next birthday? Is he 32 next birthday? He's had a year out with an ACL. He's bound to have lost a yard of pace if he's playing week in, week out. You're leaving him out, and you're leaving O'Dowda out. And then obviously in 4 weeks' time, you're going to have Antoine back fit. And I won't even talk about the youngsters on the bench. I mean, well, I say the youngsters on the bench, rounding about the team, because you've got Riley Towler, he's a defender. But then if you look at Janner, Pearson, Conway and Bell, you know, they're all kids. I mean, they're not going to get a look in, really, I don't think, you know, where Scott is a different league to all of those. But Chris Honor said to me, he said, we've got probably four or five absolute certain starters come what may. But he said, other than that, it's take your pick. Yeah. And I said on the fans forum the other week, that side that you saw the Exeter and the Plymouth games, didn't you? Yeah. Plymouth was the main team, but I wouldn't have backed that main team to beat the Exeter team when you look at who lined up in there.
So I'd like to see it. Yeah.
You know, they could have done 18 versus or shirts and skins, to use an old way of doing it. But, you know, so we've had this clear out, but we've still got a lot of some very good players, but we haven't got a first 11, have we? Because you can change it so much.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think some of the aspects of the team are starting to come together. I think we'd probably, and certainly the next few weeks, probably going to say that the back four is starting to look like fairly settled. Because I thought Danny Simpson looked really rusty against Villa. Didn't think he pressed his case at all. I thought actually Zach Viner was magnificent in that game.
Yeah.
I thought he was one of the few guys to win duels against the Villa wingers and come away with the ball. I remember him sitting El Ghazi down on his backside at one time, coming away with the ball. That was magnificent. Didn't see that the other side from Jada Silva so much. But that's your balance there. So I could see those four being the back four there. Yeah, I think Joe Williams longer term will be the guy to feature alongside Matty yeah. James. I think he's got the leadership skills and the all-round game. It's just the fitness, obviously, that is the thing with him. Yeah, as you say, up front, that's probably where there are the biggest questions, and people have still got to put their hands up there.
Yeah, as you said, as everybody's saying, where are the goals going to come from? Well, looking at the pundits around the country, and I know you've commented, done another article on that, where I don't think we're amongst the favourites for the relegation, but almost to a forecast, we're amongst favourites for the bottom six. I mean, Barnsley finished just off relegation last season. Do you think there's a potential there to do a Barnsley?
I do. I think momentum, like a lot of people say, is huge. I do think that's right. If they can get the confidence of a few wins, get that belief back. And I don't underestimate how tough that's going to be. I think how City start this season could be a huge, huge factor in how the season goes and also how Nigel Pearson does. Because I just think to turn things around from last season isn't going to be the easiest thing. I still think there's going to be some mental fragility that needs to be overcome. I think the Ashton Gate thing is still overhanging the club. They haven't won at Ashton Gate under Nigel
January.
Pearson yet.
Yeah, no, they haven't. And I don't think Nigel's the sort of guy that if they're 2-0 up against Blackpool with 5 minutes to go, he's going to be bouncing around the ground or anything like that, is he?
No. Absolutely not. So, yeah, they've got a lot of work to do to get things moving in the right direction. But if they can do that, and the sooner it is, the better, then who knows where you can go. As you say, Barnsley didn't have a great start last season. They just built them.
Well, they changed their manager as well. They changed their manager after 7 or 8 games, didn't they? Yeah.
Exactly that. I do think when you look at the Championship this season, I think there's not been a huge amount of spending. There's not been a huge amount of transfers, even the teams coming down. So maybe there is an opportunity there. The other thing is, I do look at this Bristol City squad, and I think, like a lot of fans, I still see a few holes in there, a few areas where I do think they need to improve. Maybe another good fullback in, maybe another quality striker. If they could do that kind of business either at the end of this window or in January, then, maybe.
That's a very good point you make there, because I think Zach Viner is a better fullback than he is a central defender, because he has those momentary lapses. He ain't no midfielder, and if you said he was, well, however many have we got there? I mean, as you say, the first 5 games are important. If you look at the match for match in the corresponding fixtures last season and substitute Blackpool for Coventry with Blackpool, the corresponding fixtures last season, we won 4 out of 5. Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see that happen this time. Doesn't mean it dictates what's coming for the rest of the season. But after 5 games before the first international break, what do you think in your mind is an acceptable points total? Is it anything above 5 is pretty bloody good? Or would you expect more or what?
Well, let's have a look at the fixtures a second.
I can rattle them off. It's Blackpool at home, Middlesbrough away, Reading away, Swansea home, Cardiff away.
Yeah, sure. I think something like 10 points would be good for me. I think if you get 10 points from that lot, would be a tremendous start. Maybe just even something like 8 or something, a couple of wins, a couple of draws and a loss. Even 7 wouldn't be too far away, obviously. And
no, two wins, one draw and a defeat. That would be good. And maybe if they did get 10 points in the first 5, maybe Nigel would bounce around the ground. What you don't want to do is stumble to a draw against Blackpool and then get knocked out by the men of the Forest. And then, you know what OTIB will be like. You know, they'll be in meltdown. Gregor, a couple of things just to finish. I mean, well before your time, because you're a relatively young man and you weren't even in Bristol then, but Terry Cooper sadly passing away, the outpouring of what a nice guy he is, which is undisputed, you know, really great guy. And there was a petition going round to name the South Stand the Terry Cooper Stan, has there been any, have you asked anything of the club if they're going to do something special for Terry? Are they having a minute's applause at the weekend? What's the party line on that?
I think it's an absolute given that they will do something this weekend. We haven't asked them just yet because it's pre-Blackpool press tomorrow. So, yeah, you can bet we'll be asking about that then. And no doubt Nigel Pearson will be giving his view on it. I am absolutely sure that they will be doing a minute's silence or applause, whatever they decide on that one. And, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one on renaming the South Stand. I'd be all for that. I think that would be a tremendous tribute to him. And I mean, from the people that I look up to when doing this job, sort of journalists who've been covering this ground for a lot longer than I have, such as Angus, who you had on the other day, yeah. Also Richard Latham. Which I know from then just how highly rated Terry Cooper was. So one to keep an eye on for sure.
Well, those were the days, as you might have heard us say, in the 80s, when me, Richard Latham, and Phil Tottle, we all used to travel on the bloody team coach, you know, and it was a far cry from where you are now. Final question, I only just read it off of your website, and you congratulated Ben on tour for getting that out. The word Lansdowne legacy came into his interview from, I think it was John, and it's almost like we've done the training ground, we've got the ground, and this legacy and additional investment. Should we read anything into that throwaway comment, or what are your thoughts on that? You've written an article this evening.
Yes and no. Obviously, I'm taking a little bit of license here, but I just wonder if it's a little bit like a similar situation to when Steve Lansdowne was on the Three Peeps in a podcast earlier this year, and obviously the owner then explained that he was looking for outside investment in Bristol City, and he was quite clear that he doesn't want to take on the club for that much longer. And I think he sort of hinted really that John Lansdowne didn't want to either, and that they, as a family, are looking to the longer term future of Bristol City. And then John was asked about plans for the Astio stand last week, and he sort of hinted there that there are plans to develop that into a hub for the Robbins Foundation, obviously the community arm of the club, which he's been thoroughly involved in. So yeah, just putting all that together, it sounds a little bit like John was hinting that there's maybe a set plan there to finish off Ashton Gate and the sports quarter. The planning was put in June for that. And then, maybe possibly build this hub for the community centre in down the far end of the ground, put it together with the training ground, and you've got everything that would make basically the club a tremendously enticing for anybody who wants to buy a club and maybe try and get them into the Premier League, because that's where the big money is. And it's a good investment opportunity for someone who is serious about taking
somebody who's serious and somebody who's sensible as well, because that's the one thing that Steve has been. He's been judicious in some respects, maybe less so in others, things that he spent on. But it's the hope that kills. This is season 55 for me. Gregor, I'm just going to end the recording now, but so everybody can hear it. Thanks for that. It was, what you had to say was interesting and informative. Here we go. Nice.